Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
This is Radio Influence. The future is now.
Welcome to the Valentine's Day edition of the MMA Report podcast. Of course, I am Jason Floyd, and I am coming to you from the Mohegan Sun up here in Connecticut as I made my way up here earlier today, and I have got a jam-packed show for you. So we're going to get you ready for tomorrow's Bellator 215 and Bellator 216. Going to have five interviews for you here this week on the podcast. You're going to hear my conversation with the president of the Association of Boxing Commissions and Combative Sports, Mike Mazzulli. Of course, also runs the Mohegan Tribe Department of Athletic Regulations. Had about a half-hour conversation with him to kind of talk about various things going on with the regulatory side. Had a great conversation with him. Also did ask some questions that someone submitted on social media. We talked the type of medical testing that goes on for a fighter to get licensed. We talked drug testing and various other topics. Then you're going to hear my conversation with Mike Kimble. Of course, Mike going to be a part of the main card on Friday night live on the Paramount Network, also streaming on DAZN, as of course he's going to be taking on John Duma. I had a conversation with John Duma recently, and in part of that conversation, John Duma talked about how he was surprised that Mike Kimble took this fight. And in that interview, you're going to hear me ask Mike Kimble about that. Also, you're going to hear my conversation with Tyson Chartier. Of course, he is the man who runs Top Game Management. He's a manager plus coach, so talk to him about a range of topics because he does have two fighters on these Bellator cards this weekend. On Friday night, he's got John Duma, and then, of course, on Saturday, he has got Justin Sumter. Of course, I talked to Justin recently, so head over to MMAReport.com to check out that interview. Then you're going to hear my conversation with the man that runs the MMA Lab, John Crouch. Of course, last week on the podcast, I was joined by the head striking coach at the MMA Lab, Eddie Cha. This week, hear my conversation with John Crouch, talked about various things, and really talked a lot about UFC Phoenix with the fighters that he's going to have on that card. And then my final conversation is going to be with Nolan King, a fellow MMA reporter. Had a chance to sit down and talk to him about these Bellator events that are taking place here on Friday and Saturday night. Plus, so we talked about a wide range of topics. So had a great conversation with Nolan. So come here shortly. You'll hear my conversation with Mike Mazzulli. Then we'll get into the other interviews as well. Of course, made my way up here today here on Thursday on Valentine's Day. I had an early morning flight out of Tampa and got up here. Weather's actually pretty nice. It was like 50 degrees outside, so really nice. And, of course, here at the beautiful Mohegan Sun. And did have the Bellator Media Day was today. I did talk to Austin Vanderford, of course. Most people will call him Mr. Van Zandt. Had a great conversation with him. I'm going to have that up on the MMAReport.com later on today. Really just a fun conversation I had with him. We talked about perceptions versus realities, and of course the matchup against Cody Jones. That's an interesting matchup. And obviously I think outside looking in, you got to think all the pressure is going to be on Austin Vanderford on Friday night at Bellator 215. To see what he can do. Of course, taking on Cody Jones, big opportunity for Cody Jones. Also, that main card, we had Eduardo Dantas versus Toby Misek. I had a chance to talk to Toby recently. You can check that out on the MMAReport.com. How does Eduardo Dantas backed up? But, of course, the main event, Matt Mitrione and Sergey Kharitonov. I would really be surprised if that fight makes it past, the second minute of the second round. I think someone's going to get knocked out. But, obviously, I think just like, talking to various people up here today, everyone is really interested in Saturday night's main event, Paul Daly and Michael Page. It was interesting to me to see how big of a favorite Michael Venom Page was when the line came out, minus 350. And so we'll see what happens with him. Vitaly Minnikov, Czech Congo, which is a number one contender fight in the heavyweight division. Interesting article on Forbes on Thursday by Paul Gift about a legal situation in terms of the management of Vitaly Minnikov, and coming out that he's making a minimum of $300,000 a fight. I mean, woo. Good for you, Vitaly Minnikov. That is a sweet deal for you. You got Roy Nelson, Mirko Krokop, Eric Silva. Seeing him around around the hotel, man. He looks in great shape, so making his Bellator debut. When you look at the preliminary card on Saturday, Tyrell Fortune really is a name that sticks out to you, that has you really interested. Also, when you hear my conversation with Nolan King, we talked about some of those local fighters. Obviously, since Nolan lives up here, he has a little better knowledge of that. Steve Mowry, a lot of has been made about kind of the fact that Tony Lopez did not get that fight. I understand the decision that Mike Mazzulli made in that one. Billy Goff is a name that I was told about a little earlier today. Looking forward to that. Of course, look, when you're on press row, you can't sit there and root, but internally I'll be rooting for Pete Rogers Jr., my co-host on the MMA Report DFS show. Actually, we'll have a DFS show coming up. We're going to be recording that tonight after the ceremonial weigh-in, so we'll talk a little bit about UFC Phoenix as well. But right now I do want to get you to my conversation with Mike Mazzulli, the president of the Association of Boxing Commission Combative Sports, also the director of the Mohegan Tribe Department of Athletic Regulations. We talked a lot of things going on the regulatory side of MMA. Mike, it's a pleasure to be up here in a chilly Connecticut. Not as cold as I thought it would be, but did see some snow as I was in that Uber coming up here to Mohegan Sun. As always, man, I appreciate time. It's Thursday morning, late Thursday morning. You just got done with the weigh-in. So kind of take my listeners into from your side, the regulatory side. What's going on right now?
Well, it's interesting. As the ABC has set new policies when it comes to weigh-ins. We did a weigh-in at 10 o'clock, which is the official weigh-in. What that does, it allows the fighters to get hydrated. And then we'll do so that lasts about 15 minutes. I don't play games. We come in and we get the job done. And then they're able to eat. They come back at 5 o'clock. We had an ops meeting at 11 where everyone that's involved in the promotion as well as the production sits down. And we go over policies and procedures and the time frame, kind of the schedule. And then today they'll report at 4 o'clock. We'll get them licensed. They have the weigh-in at 5 o'clock for TV. And then they see the doctors. So it's a well-oiled machine sometimes.
So here's the question. I call it ceremonial weigh-ins. Yeah. Fake weigh-ins, whatever you want to call it. We're going to have a lot of security on stage for the ceremonial weigh-ins tomorrow?
Well, it's interesting you say that because I'll address it with both those guys. They know I don't play around. They've fought here numerous times. And they understand that a percentage will go away if they act really crazy, if they act stupid. So I don't mind the hype, and I don't mind, you can call them names and everything. I'm not going to fine you for swearing, but the minute you touch somebody, I have a problem with it. So, especially if it's on site. If it's off site, I have no control over it. But if it's on the property and it's related to the event the day of or weigh-in, then I have a problem with it.
Well, it's like Burt Watson used to run fighter ops for the UFC. He'd always say, you don't get paid for fighting on weigh-in day. You get paid for fighting on fight day.
That's great. I remember Burt back in 2002 when he was here with the UFC. So, absolutely. He's a good man.
I think in terms of these fighter meetings, kind of, is there – what are you trying to stress to the fighters?
Well, my big shtick is weighing and cutting weight and everything. That's a huge issue, and I believe that's a bigger issue than PEDs at this point. I think these kids have to understand what they're doing and how they cut weight. And with that said, this morning I do a 15-minute talk ahead of time. We talk about weight and everything. And I said to them, I said, guys, look at the card for tomorrow. They're all heavyweights. Three of them are over 40 years old, and they're still fighting. There's a huge correlation between weight cut and length of career. I don't care. I have doctors that tell me that. Chet Congo, Nelson, Crow Cop, they're 40 plus, and they're passing physicals. I'm making them. I require a stress test and a new MRA for these guys. And there's so weight is huge for me, and that's I think is the biggest white elephant in the room right now when it comes to MMA.
I can tell you, I have private conversations with fighters who bring that up. They, one of the private conversations I had this week was, hey, are they doing that 10% rule on fight day?
Well, I got to tell you, last week, Chadwick, that was on the Euro card, I find out he weighed 205 on Tuesday. He weighs in on Friday at 187.4. Now he's still the contract weight was 185. So we do the next day weigh-in. 26 pounds he gains. Ooh. Okay? And with that said, he gets his butt kicked. He loses all three rounds handily. Handily. So I go back of the house and during his post-physical, and I say, hey, you're going up in weight. You know, you usually fight at 205. I said, you went down to 187. He came to the weigh-in, and it was funny because afterwards he gets on the scale. He's 187.5. He starts drinking, and I go into the room he was, and he had three women there. And I look at the three ladies. I said, okay, who's his wife or girlfriend? Somebody's got to be here. You know, and one of them, and the young lady raises her hand. So like, I'm his girlfriend. I said, good. I said, you like the way he looks? I said, how was the last 3 days dealing with him trying to cut weight since he was 205? I said, if something happens in the cage, are you going to be okay with yourself? And she looked at me, and she was white. And, she wasn't just embarrassed. She was scared for him. So I explained to him after the fight, after he got his butt kicked, that he's going up in weight. He's going up to the minimum he can fight right now for Bellator, if I'm regulating it, is 195. Now, he still went from 205 to 187. So, I mean, 195 is a big jump, losing 10 pounds in 3 days. So with that said, he said, okay, no problem. Thank you, Commish. I told Jude, who's the matchmaker over there, and he said, absolutely. So when it comes to weight loss, I don't play games, and Bellator understands. There's a there's a huge separation between what I do as a regulator and what Bellator does as a promotion. And if that's ever skewed, I'll stop doing it. And Bellator knows that. They know that I'm not going to play the game. You know, at the end of the day, when it comes to fighter safety, and in my rules meetings, I tell everybody right off the bat that I'm concerned about the fighter. I don't give two shits about you as a second. You're a nice guy, but you're not the one who has to lose 0.25 pounds because he's overweight. You know, I go back to that Till video where he had seven kids sitting there watching him lose weight, laying on a mattress next to a treadmill. I mean, that's my big issue. And Chadwick was very professional. Yes, sir. No, sir. And from now on, I put it on the ABC registry that he can't fight he's got to weigh 195 or more. So,
I remember when we were in Orlando back in August, a lot of the talk was dehydration test. Mm-hmm. Is that still advancing on?
You know, I commend Andy. You know, Andy has the resources to do all that. And yes, what I'm doing is I have the doctors. You know, we don't allow any IVs, of course. And Dr. Schwartz is my chief ringside physician that works really hard to make sure these kids aren't dehydrated. I don't necessarily do what Andy does to that point, but we would like to see that happen. We talk about having a physical where when you get your yearly physical, the doctor recommends a certain weight. You know, it's nothing worse than seeing a fighter that gets a physical 3 weeks ago and he's 185. He sends the physical into us and he's weighing 185, but he's fighting in 3 weeks at 135. And we see that. And, you know, I take him aside and we discuss it. And if Dr. Schwartz feels that that weight's not acceptable, he doesn't fight at that weight. So these fighters have to be educated in cutting weight the proper way and understanding that your walk around weight is what you should be fighting at almost. You know, I go back to Bernard Hopkins, 170 and fought at 168 as a world champ. He fought into his 50s. Again, is there a correlation? To me, sure the hell seems like it.
Yeah, I was actually at a regional event in Tennessee last month, and one of the fighters actually on the card, I was talking to him, and he was talking about how he actually went out to California. There was a seminar out there, I believe it was done by Tyler Minton, who's a weight cutting guy, yeah. Who's a former fighter, and he said, he's like, look, it's just an education. It's learning what it is, and one of the things I do find interesting is you don't see it in the UFC, you don't see it in Bellator, but you're seeing promotions. I'm seeing it more in Canada more than anything else. Super lightweight, 165 pounds, title fights. There's one in Michigan on Saturday, and so you're starting to see that more, and I think we're all kind of wondering if it ever does happen.
Well, Jimmy Birchfield, right? CES has had a champ at, cruiserweight?
There was talk that they were going to do that.
Okay.
It never kind of came about, I think because they kind of had these heavyweights that were on the smaller scale of heavyweight, they were in that 230 to 240 range.
Yeah.
And they kind of thought, like, hey, if these guys can cut the 225, we got a little bit of a niche here. But that ultimately just it never came together.
Reality fighting comes here two, three times, four times a year. And I always tell them, I don't care what division you're in. You can fight for you can have a contract weight of 192. They agree upon it. You sign the contract. It's a fight at 192. I never, ever liked the idea of catch weights. I think catch weights are overrated. You know, it's a contract weight of 192. You and I are fighting. It's a contract weight of 272. You know what I mean? Of course, 265 max. But, you know, it's a contract weight. It's not a catch weight. I think catch weights make no sense. It's old school. And so
we've had that conversation in the past. You're like, it's not catch weight, it's contract weight.
Yeah, because you sign a contract that you're fighting at 191, right? 190 plus one. So, you know, it's silly, but.
And one of the things, and you, Andy, are probably the two commissions that have the most medical testing that goes on. So, you know, let's take, you know, any fighter that's fighting this weekend, what's they're under that 40-year-old age.
Yeah.
What kind of medical testing are they going through to get a license?
Well, actually, the first one, within 1 year, you need a physical. Within 1 year, signed by off by a doctor. You need an eye exam within that year. You need of course, all the blood, HIV, Hep B and C. You need a EKG, baseline EKG. So, in other words, Jay, if you fought here 5 years ago, I'd require that baseline EKG, all right? And then it's a baseline MRI CT. In other words, if you fought here five years ago and it was dated 5 years ago, that's acceptable. And then what I do is I require you to get a neuro exam, which is a lot cheaper. And actually, believe it or not, Dr. Lessie, who actually is a neurologist on staff, he'll be here tomorrow. He's doing a couple of them for the kids. And he's a New York Yankees neurologist. He's also a professional bull riding neurologist. You know, his resume is he just recently picked up U.S. ski team. He's a neurologist for the U.S. ski team, which he just came back from Colorado skiing, which made me a little upset. But anyway, you know, so we that's our medical requirements, and I think they're good. Our blood requirements are 6 months though, so.
You know, in terms of medical testing, obviously, I think a story that came out, I want to say it was about a week ago, with Vanderlei Silva talking about concussion-like symptoms. And I know Scott Coker has come out and said that, you know, Vanderlei would not compete without complete clearance.
Yeah.
I guess generally speaking, not necessarily in terms of what Vanderlei said, but as a regulator, you see that. Is that something where you're just like, if a promotion comes to me with this guy, it's much more than just a series of tests that –
Oh, yeah,
say a Roy Nelson or a Chuck Congo or a Vitaly Minnikov is going through.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. I honestly can say to you, I don't know if I would ever allow him to fight for me. At the end of the day, just like Hunt, right? He said the same thing, and then all of a sudden they go through some tests and he's okay. To me, it's very difficult for me to allow him to get in the cage after what he just said. And I think maybe it's a language barrier a little bit. Maybe he didn't understand what he said. You know, I don't know, but I must admit, the first thing I would go to Dr. Alessi and ask him, but is it worth me taking the liability to allow him to fight? Even if he passed all those tests and something occurs, hey, Jay, you're at Mohegan Sun Casino. You see what we could lose on something like that. I mean, the liability, I don't think I would take the liability. I don't think it's worth it.
You know, when I heard the comments, my initial thought was, he's already made the decision. He's retiring. Because, you know, to me, I would think you wouldn't make those comments if you actually thought of fighting again. Because, I mean, you know, I mean, you can joke about one commission in terms of another commission, but I don't know how, you know, anyone could regulate them at this point.
Absolutely. I don't understand why he would even come out and say that if he expects to get back in the cage.
And what's the benefit if you're the promoter?
There is no benefit.
Like, to me, right. I mean, you talk about the liability you put yourself through. I mean, you know, and speaking kind of retired fighters, one of the things that you have done is a retired fighters fund.
Yeah.
You know, I know we've had a chance to kind of talk about it. Kind of let my listeners know exactly what the ABC is doing with that.
Well, actually, it's a great fund, and I'm very proud of it. The board of directors, you know, we sat down and made an initiative to start this charitable fund. The Muhammad Ali Act, which was basically just related to boxing, states that the ABC should start a fund out to support the fighters. So we started the charitable fund 3 years ago. And the first year we gave away $500 or $1,000 a piece. And it's all anonymous. It's online. You can go to abcboxing.com and check it out. You can donate there. And the second year, we gave another $2,000 away. And this past year, we're doing so well, we gave $5,000 away each person. And actually, I can name a couple of guys because they're okay with it. Peter Cardona, which is one of my local guys here, 2 years ago, we gave him $1,000. And Pito was NABF champ in boxing. And he basically has a head injury. You know, he was a hell of a fighter. He goes and sees Doc. I set him up with Dr. Alessi every 6 months. He goes and sees him. He's doing extremely well. He was just that he comes to all our boxing shows. I give him passes, and he sits ringside. And he was here last fight with his wife. And just a great kid. You know, he's coaching kids up in Hartford in the projects. And just, you know, so he was so happy. So the this past year, we gave two $5,000 gifts away. And it was we're still doing that. Hopefully this year we'll be able to give $8,000 away per person, to one in boxing and one in MMA. So
and you're going to Phoenix next year for the convention, right?
That's correct. Yeah,
or this year.
This year, yeah, it's just right around the corner. We're going to Scottsdale. Actually, the third week and in July is the training for Saturday, Sunday, all the officials. And I've always said this to you, and you know that. I've always said to fighters they can attend for free. A fighter, you know, nothing worse than a fighter not knowing how you judge an MMA or boxing fight. And so we have some people attend, not many. I always say to all the press people too, listen, come and, you know, you can sit there and complain about the judges, but until you know how we judge, you should just kind of shut your mouth a little bit.
I think it's also different if you're in that seat. It's very easy to sit on press row. Very easy to sit in front of your television.
Oh, absolutely.
But all of a sudden, if you're right there, and now, and one of the things of, depending on how the cage is set up in MMA, there can be blind spots. I mean, there's been times where I've been, you know, in Bellator's cage, there are blind spots.
Absolutely.
And sometimes you might miss something that could be a key. I mean, I remember, I want to say it was an event here. It was Mike Richmond against, was it Desmond Green?
That was a while ago.
Yeah, and Des won Des won the decision. People were kind of complaining about it. I'm like, I'm sitting on a press row. Richmond's punches weren't landing.
Yeah.
He was missing. But those are some, you know, also when you're watching on TV, commentary can also
sway opinions.
It can very sway your opinion. So why, unless like I really like the color commentator.
Yeah.
And I should never say this as a play-by-play guy, but yeah. I turn it off.
Yeah.
Because then it doesn't persuade how I view the fight.
Well, I got to tell you, and I was talking to Roy Nelson yesterday about it with his wife, the Mitrione-Nelson fight 2 years ago. So it was, you know, it was third round, and Roy had Mitrione in a crucifix, and he's up top. And where he was located was on the other side of the cage for me and Dave Torelli. Mm-hmm. Okay, Dave Peabody was right in front of him, and Eric Colon was on the other side. They had a better angle. And with that said, Torelli gave it a 10-8 round, but he didn't see how much damage was occurring because it was a crucifix. He was on top of him, and he was landing fists on him. The other two gave it a 10-9 round. So after the fight, Roy comes to me and says, Kamish, I should have been two people should have given a 10-8 round so we'd go into an extra round because it would have been a draw. And I said to Roy, do me a favor, go home and look at the tape. And if you have a problem, give me a call back. I said, but the location, that's why we have three judges, right? That's why we have three judges. Two judges saw it 10-8, 10-9, and one saw it 10-8. And with that said, I put a question mark. What I do is I judge every round myself. If it's so close, I have a winner. If it's so close, I'll put a question mark. And my opinion is that question mark, it doesn't really matter where you're going with that round. It's very close. A fine example is a pit bull scope fight last week in Newcastle. That second round was so extremely close. We had one person give it to Scope and one person give it to Pitbull, the second round.
Yeah.
And I had a question mark on that. So, you know, it's interesting, but that's what we have three judges for. And every once in a while, you'll see one of the judges look up at the screen. And I recommend them to do it. If there's no screen in front of them, if you don't have a view, look up at the screen and see a better location. I know it's funny because Big John McCarthy came to me a couple of months ago and asked about everybody should have a big screen in front of him to look at it. Because all of a sudden, he's play-by-play and he sees a screen. He said it's so much easier to judge. Well, it is, but my question too is, are you really hearing the blows?
I will tell you this. Calling MMA play-by-play,
yeah.
I have found myself, when the action is not in front of us, there'll be a monitor to my left, and I look at the monitor.
Yep.
I don't look at the action.
Okay.
Because typically it's going to give me a better idea of what to say.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because Bellator provides the monitors.
Yeah.
But we have Reality Fighting here and a couple other smaller Muay Thai shows, and they don't have the ability to provide the monitors to us.
But if they're not being streamed or broadcast somewhere, they're not going to have that.
Yeah. So you really – I tell judges as well, if you have to get up and walk 2 or 3 feet to have a better view, go for it. Because at the end of the day, you know, your score is what matters. So Don Trell in boxing is known to do that, where he gets up and starts, you know, poking his head through the ropes almost. And I'm like, oh God. But anyway, you know, his scores are always good, yeah. But he wants to be able to see the most. You know, so he's gotten up and walked 2 or 3 feet one way to look at it. So
yeah, I mean, in the 10-8 rounds, been a big conversation in MMA about obviously. I know this is a pet peeve of yours when people say new rules.
It's not new rules.
I know.
You're going to rile me up again.
Well, it's funny is because I know one of the UFC producers, and I'm like, guys, it's the current rules.
Yeah, it's been there for 3 years. You know what's interesting is there were some states and tribes that had a problem with the new rules, okay, which I understand. Listen, I understand, you know, no one likes change. But at the end of the day, it's been 3 years, and there's nothing proven that they're more dangerous than the past rules.
Yeah.
We talk about down fighter and everything. And when it comes to my rules meeting, which I hope you come to tonight, you'll see I'll actually pull somebody off out of the crowd and ask them to stand and drop down to one knee. And I ask the fighters, is this a down fighter? Then stand up and put one hand down. And so we go through the whole process, and I get – people come up to me afterwards and say, gee, that makes a lot of sense. And there's not one instance where it's been more dangerous, these new rules. Actually, to me, it clarifies everything. The clarification, like, you know, we're talking about no clavicle grab. Like, who's ever done that? I mean, I don't even bring that up, that we got rid of that years ago with the rules, not new rules, but the rules.
Yeah.
And no one questions that. It's just a down, and I don't understand if it's a political thing for some of these states, you know. But I hope in the future, as you probably know, come August, I'm no longer president. We only have a 4-year run. So whoever becomes president next, I hope all these guys want to come back and work with the new president, because at the end of the day, they had a problem with me, which, you know, me, I don't give a shit anyway. But it's only hurting the fighter, and that's what my concern is.
Yeah.
You know, it's only hurting the fighter. And, so now we have the old rules. We have the ABC rules, and we have the Nevada rules.
And I've had this conversation with you. I've had other people on the regulatory side that the people that it hurts is the fighters. And, you know, I remember I told you a story about Eric Anders where he was fighting Tim Williams, and he nearly had an illegal strike. And I talked to him after the fact, and he said, Jason, I knew the rules. Mm-hmm. He goes, because I asked the referee when he came back to me before the fight to talk about the rules. And he goes, I asked him, are we under the new old rules or the newer rules? He goes, so I knew exactly what I could do in terms of the ground fighter. Now, and I will tell you this, you don't hear that from every fighter.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because what I do is I do the rule set today. The referee tomorrow will also go back of the house and readdress everything. So one-on-one. So when you're one-on-one, you can ask the silly questions.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And some of them are, listen, how many times have I asked a fighter, when do you go to the scorecards in an MMA fight, in a 3-round fight? They don't know. They don't even know that in the third round of a fight, and we're 10 seconds in, and Jay, you hit me, and then the fight stops because of an accidental foul, we're scoring that round.
Yeah.
And I believe it's their managers and their seconds that should be teaching them this stuff. And that's why we've always opened up the training to everybody. You know, and in last year we had a couple fighters come in. I hope this year we have more. You know what I mean? you got to know the rules before you get in the cage. It's like playing National Football League and not knowing, you know, what a holding penalty is.
Hey, trust me, every year when I get ready for football season, they bring in the officials.
Yeah.
And they go over, these are the point of emphasis. This is what we're looking for. And typically, and this year it was the hitting the quarterbacks. We saw it early on in the season.
Yeah,
it seemed like
headshots.
You know, hey, we're flagging. But as it kind of the season went on, so you just we have to evolve as a sport. You know, it was one of your trainers, Varel down in Brazil, took a point for an eye poke. And I mean, like I sit there and I'll joke. You could grab the fence 100 times. I don't think you're getting a point taken away.
But unless the man off of Carvalho fight overseas with Kevin McDonald,
yeah. Okay, you're talking 0.01% chance.
He's one of my and he's also a trainer of the ABC though.
Yeah, but it's one of those things, and I've had the conversation with coaches. They'll sit there and say, if you're about to get taken down, if they're not going to take a point, why not just grab the fence?
Right.
Until they take a point.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that was the Carvalho one was pretty, and I go over this all the time when it talks about grabbing the fence. Carvalho was taking Manoff down, and Manoff turns around and just grabs, fingers through the fence. And the best thing is McDonald called a timeout and took a point because it changed the whole whole ground. So,
exactly.
I call that the John Jones rule too. I mean, your hands got to be closed fist to the eyes, and you can open them with the.
Well, that's what happened down in Brazil. David Tamor, he didn't get him in one eye. He got him in both eyes.
Ouch.
I mean, and amazing, and of course, after the fact, Charles Oliveira mentions that he really couldn't see well, but yeah.
But they're going to fight anyway, and that's another issue. You know, these fighters, they don't understand if it's in the second round and you're injured and it's accidental, it's a no contest. Like, these fighters have to understand the rule set.
Well, here's my thought process on that. I think because that if they win, their pay goes double. I think that plays into it.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, look, and it's out there publicly.
Yeah.
There's a lot of guys in Bellator who are getting a flat fee. And it's not like – and there's this thought process. People are like, oh, if it's a flat fee, they won't go as hard. I'm like, no.
No.
No, they want to progress their career. Two other things I want to mention. First off, I've got this question related to boxing and their weigh-ins, where it says, want to know when the new weigh-in rules for boxing will be enforced. It was supposed to be January 1st, but there's been no word. Is there a new time frame?
That's interesting. Yes, there is. We just recently received all the documents from the WBC. What is the ABC is going to be the depository of the second-day weigh-in information. The WBC, the IBF, and the WBO are presently doing it. The WBA we're having some issues with, and we're trying to get that addressed. But you got to crawl before you walk. And I'll tell you, I really love what the WBC and the IBF is doing. And the IBF is so stringent; they have a 10 pound gain, which is huge. So what we're doing is, if you're 10% over, you still can fight that night because we don't adversely affect the TV and everything, but we're requiring the sanction bodies to remove them from the ratings until they make the weight and have a fight at that weight, and then they can place them back in. Now, with that said, it's very difficult. We have to get everybody on board. It's very difficult for the sanction bodies to for us to make sure the sanction bodies implemented. You know, our problem is we have this federal law, but with that said, no one's ever been prosecuted through the federal law by the feds. You know what I mean? So it's just kind of a so that's what we're trying to do it for. We're trying to push the safety aspect of it instead of that we're gonna take you to the feds and they're gonna prosecute you. You know, we're trying to do it in a manner where everyone says, yeah, it's about fighter safety.
Yeah, I'd say that's an interesting thing in terms of the thought of bringing the Muhammad Ali back to MMA. Nothing's happened on that. It has gone dead quiet.
It's so funny because I totally agree with you. And my theory is, you know, working for a tribe, and I've been here for 22 years, and I love my job. You know, my thing is fighters are the most important in my eyes. And I don't think it would help. I don't know what the benefit would be. If somebody can explain to me what the benefit would be to have a federal oversight in MMA too, I'd be like, okay. But the feds have never prosecuted anybody relating to anything regarding the Muhammad Ali Act. I mean, just think about that. I mean, we can threaten them and we can, you know, at the end of the day, so I think we regulate MMA extremely well. You know, I know there's some states and tribes that there's some issues with, but I think the ABC is helping everybody as much as possible. My biggest offender recently is the state of Montana. The state of Montana has a puppet commission. Not even a puppet. They have a department that says they can't oversee the events, and we have promoters that are running boxing shows, amateur and pro, and these kids aren't even getting suspended. So we're trying to rein that in, but it's a very difficult process because Montana doesn't have any money to do it the right way.
No, it's let's end on this note. Of course, it came out this week. Drug testing, out of competition, drug testing mm-hmm. has been taking place, and one of the things we never hear about drug testing is how much it costs.
Yeah. Actually, it's interesting because I utilize it. My process is a little different than USADA and VADA, okay? It's the same testing. It's the same drugs being tested. And I'm not a guy that goes public about all these tests, and you know that, Jay. You know, I'd have to say probably about 10% of my tests are public, and the other percent aren't. And usually I go public if it's a positive or if it's a big show.
No, I'll say this. You don't have to say it. The general MMA fan, boxing fan, does not care if the tests come back clean.
Right. And that's what I do is I use Quest. So you're going to fight for me, just like the five guys I hit yesterday. I get online. I go on the Quest website. I plug in the information. A barcode pops out. I call up the fighter. I said, hey, this is Commissioner Mazzulli calling. You have 24 hours to come into this lab, Quest Lab in New York City, right? Roy Nelson. Okay, Commish, thanks a lot. Here's I send a picture of it or I email it, whatever they want. They walk into the Quest Lab, and I tell the Quest Lab, I say, I would like a picture text to me of the fighter and the collector at the lab. Mm-hmm. So they send it to me. They go in. They pee in the cup. The test automatically gets shipped out to Utah for the results. And that's out of competition. Now, as you know, I tested Chandler. I mean, Chandler came up to me when I tested him, and he said, "Commish, I didn't know we do out of competition testing." I said, "Of course we do." I said, "I don't tell you." I mean, Mitrione came up to me today and said, "Commish, you didn't get me down in New York." I said, "No, I know." I said, "I got you five other times. Every time you fought here, I got you out of competition in fight night. I'll probably get him fight night coming up." But I mean, you know, so it's got to be random. And you know, a fine example is Thompson. I hit Thompson over in the UK, and he popped. I even hit Young. I hit Blair Tugman, and he popped. You know what I mean? So I mean, I do have positive results that I don't really, and I suspend them. You know, Blair Tugman suspended until I think November of next year. I mean, so you know, it does happen, but I'm not knocking on the door at 4 o'clock in the morning. You know what I mean?
There was a fighter the other morning. He basically got woke up at 5:30 in the morning, and I forget what his tweet was. Basically, like, "Hey, you just woke up my entire neighborhood and my kids," and that's the one thing about USADA I don't understand is the showing up at 6 a.m. I mean, because I'm like, man, I don't know if you would necessarily want to be knocking on a fighter's door at 6 a.m., especially if they're in.
What about if they have kids? And listen,
like Floyd Mayweather is a classic case. This is a guy that goes and trains at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Good point.
So if he's home at 6, he's sleeping. Now you're going to wake. That is the one part about USADA I don't understand. I understand why they do it, but here's the one thing I've never gotten. Why would you sign up for that job to be the collector? This guy knock on someone's door at 6 a.m.?
Hey, listen, I don't even know, but back in 1997, that's what I started. I was they called me the P-boy, and that's why I started here at Mohegan for boxing. We did fight night, of course, but absolutely. I mean, you get up at 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning, knocking on the door for a urine test. Somebody was telling me a story when they knocked on their door. It had to be an ex-UFC guy. And he said, "Yeah, I'm like, you know, I got a baby upstairs, and you're banging on my door. Like, what are you doing? It's, you know, it's." I think he said it was 6 o'clock when they knocked on his door.
I mean, can't you like make a phone call first? "Hey, John Smith. Hey, I'm at your door.
Yeah,
I don't want to wake your family up."
Yeah, you know, I also go back to the fact that if you test positive for the Mohegan tribe and you're out of competition or in competition, you get a year suspension and a certain amount of money. You know, I'm not going to, you know, I'm not, the suspensions aren't going to be different depending on who the fighter is. And that's, and that's a big issue I have right now with USADA is, you know, it's got to be straight across the board. Now, the responsibility at the end of the day is the commission for the suspensions. You know what I mean? And I think the commissions have to take responsibility and make sure all the suspensions are the same. You know, it doesn't depend on, you know, who's fighting next and, you know, if he's a big ticket seller or not. I think that's really skewed, and I think that needs to be addressed. And I think it is being addressed. You know, I know Andy's addressing it out there in Cali.
I've learned more about picograms in the last month. I'd probably never heard of the word before about a month ago.
And it was interesting because I agreed with Andy as a regular at Mohegan. You know, it wasn't as president of the ABC. I had some misquotes out there saying the ABC agrees with what Andy did. And it was, no, the ABC president, Michael Mazzulli, agrees with what Andy did when allowing him to fight. I think the science has to get better before we can really determine what exactly a picogram is and what does that exactly mean.
But that's got to be the issue in your shoes as a regulator. You have to depend on what science says. And I joke with this. I think there's a lot of scientists on Twitter. But listen, I'm sitting there going,
there's a lot of judges and referees on Twitter too, which is okay.
But you're having those conversations with scientists that are way smarter than anyone else out there. And that's my thing on the John Jones. Look, do I give the guy the benefit of the doubt? No, I don't.
Right.
But you got to listen to the scientists. If the scientists don't know what's going on, how can you suspend the guy?
And that lab is a lab that tests for the Olympic drug testing program, too. I mean, think about that. I mean, you know, it's not a fly-by-night scientist that doesn't know what he's talking about. I mean, this guy is a – and actually, with that said, I reached out to him. I'd really like him to speak at the ABC meeting coming up. So, because we're right in – you know, he's in L.A., and we're right down there at Scottsdale. So I'm working on trying to see if he'd have some time to get down and speak to the body on, you know, his expertise in drug testing. I think it would be a great talk.
Well, Mike, as always, I do appreciate the conversation. Looking forward to being in Phoenix. I think it's going to be a little warmer than it is outside right now.
Yeah, I actually tell you, 2 days ago, it snowed up here. So, you know, and actually Saturday it'll be 50 degrees. So, I mean, that's how screwed up the weather is up here. For some reason, last year at this time, I had probably about 4 feet of snow in my yard. So, you're lucky you're up here from Florida, and it's a nice nice weekend for you.
I think it was like 50 degrees this morning when I got in the car at about 5 a.m.
Yeah, listen, but that's beautiful.
Exactly. Mike, man, as always, appreciate the time, and I'm sure we'll be talking soon.
All right, take care. Thank you for having me.
And there was my conversation with Mike Mazzulli, of course, the man that runs the Mohegan Tribe Department of Athletic Regulation, of course, the president of the Association of Boxing Commissions and Combative Sports. Of course, one of the things he notes in that conversation is that his tenure of being the president of the ABC is coming up. A new president will be elected this year. I think I have a good idea who's going to be the front runner to that, but I think a lot of people are going to be looking at someone like an Andy Foster, potentially be the next president of the ABC, and I'll be heading out to Phoenix this summer, you know, looking forward to it. I've been to Phoenix a couple times, you know, doing games out there in Glendale, but, you know, really, really interesting to, you know, it's always fascinating to talk to someone on the regulatory side to get their take on what is going on. I will tell you this, Kevin McDonald will be the referee for Saturday night's main event between Michael Page and Paul Daly, and the referee for Sergey Kharitonov and Matt Mitrione will be Leon Roberts. Of course, is primarily worked overseas, but Mike Mazzulli has brought him in to work this event. So there gives you a little in terms of the referees for this event. But yeah, it's always interesting, of course. And then Mike talking about the drug testing, how much it costs, and for some of these commissions, it's just not affordable for these commissions to you know, fork out the amount of money it costs for drug testing. That's why for a lot of these commissions, it's great that UFC works with USADA and the fact that they can take on that cost. But as always, really do appreciate Mike Mazzulli, you know, taking time out. One of the things he did tell me earlier this week is that they will be doing the fight night weights. And you heard him in that conversation talk about a fighter last week at the Newcastle card. So hopefully I can get you that information. Look for that on the MMAreport.com as kind of, you know, it was funny as I got here on Thursday and I had a lot of Bellator people like, man, we haven't seen you. I was like, yeah, we're going to be taking the podcast out on the road. So looking forward to sitting on Press Row tomorrow night.
and Saturday night, and we'll have some coverage for you on the MMAReport.com. But, of course, on Friday night, well, you're going to have the third pro fight for Mike Kimble. He's going to be looking to go to 3-0. He's going to take on John Duma. Of course, I had an interview with John Duma up on the MMAReport.com. You can also check that on the MMAReport YouTube channel. Really would appreciate if you would sit there and subscribe and like everything we're doing there on YouTube. But, you know, Mike Kimble is a guy that, you know, up and down amateur career. But, man, he turned pro, gets that six-second win at Bellator 194, or excuse me, a 1-minute, 3-second win at Bellator 194, then comes back with a six-second win at Bellator 27. Now he takes on John Duma. So I had a chance to catch up with Mike Kimble last week, talked to him on the phone. You're going to hear that conversation now. And one of the questions I did ask him was to respond to something John Duma had said to me, when John Duma had said to me, hey, I'm surprised Mike Kimble took this fight. Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man that's going to be a part of the main card of Bellator 215. It is Mike Kimble. Looks good, 3-0 in his career. Mike, how you doing, man?
Hey, I'm doing good, man. How about yourself? And did you say I'm 3-0?
I say you're looking to go 3-0.
Oh, yeah. Well, I will be 3-0. As of right now, it's 4-0, though. Yes, sir.
I appreciate the time. Obviously, everything has gone tremendous for you. Total, you know, fight time of 1 minute and 9 seconds in your pro career. But, you know, I had a chance to talk to your opponent, John Duma, and the one thing he said to me is, he said, hey, I was surprised that Mike took this fight. When you hear comments like that, what kind of goes through your mind?
When I hear comments like that, you know, it's a bunch of things that go through my mind all at once. You know, part of it is, well, are you dumb? Why wouldn't I take this fight? Like, I'm not here to handpick and pad records to, you know, to build up my record. I'm trying to get the belt. You know what I mean? I'm here to be great. I'm not here to be, you know, another could have been. But then again, from the area and how the game is, I'm not surprised he made a comment like that, because it's like, okay, why would I take a fight against a skilled, you know, person? But it's stupid, because if you look at the, you know, my last two opponents, they've all been good. So when he says things like that, if that's how he feels, that's how he feels. He'll see why I took the fight. He'll see on Friday night why I took the fight.
I think when you talk to people in that Northeast scene, the question that comes to you is, well, what happens if the fight goes to the ground? Of course, it's up to your opponent to maybe potentially get it there. But for those people that maybe doubt your abilities on the ground, what would you say to them?
They got questions, I've got answers.
Well, that's a great way to look at it, Mike. I mean, it's the fact that, you know, and obviously you're not paid for 15 minutes of fighting. You're paid to go in there and get out as quick as possible. Is there any what's the biggest takeaway you've taken from your first two pro fights?
So Bruce Lee, many could agree, he's the greatest martial artist to ever live. Do you agree?
I agree, yeah.
Well, Bruce Lee's philosophy was, the martial artist who can employ the fewer techniques and still get the job done is the superior martial artist. So with that being said, my fights speak for themselves.
I mean, do you feel like you have only shown a very small amount of what your abilities are?
Yeah, 100%. You know what I mean? People, they haven't seen my heart. They haven't seen my chin. They haven't seen my ground game. You know, my jiu-jitsu coach is a world champion. My Mao had a GF fight team. He won the 2015 world IGBF, whatever. You know, the Kimura guy. You know, that's my dude. You know, I'm a blue belt working for my purple belt under his system. You know, I'm wrestling with Nick Newell, and he brings in guys that are D1 and things like that all the time from colleges on their off season and stuff like that. You know, I'm working, my main training partner is Jesse James Kozakowski, who's fighting on the 16th actually. He's undefeated as a professional. He's won like over 100 Nagas. You know, he's pound for pound the greatest, the best MMA ground fighter in New England. And people seem to look over that. You know, I'm not in here training with slouches, and I'm not preparing for slouches. So I just look forward to going in there Friday night, doing what I do, whatever opportunity presents itself, take it and have people going, wow, he did it again.
I think that was the thought we all had that last fight when you went out there and did what you did. you know, but when you look at John, obviously he's got the wrestling credentials, but when you look at his overall fight game, what sticks out to you?
You know, he's tough. He's not afraid to fight. He's gritty. He's tough. He's good at wrestling. He's good. He's got clean boxing. You know, he's got a good, you know, jiu-jitsu awareness. He's got okay jiu-jitsu. I'd say his wrestling is better than his jiu-jitsu. But at the end of the day, you know, it's another opponent. You know, just like they were saying, you know, this is the toughest one, or this is a tough one. You know, people are saying this is going to be a tough one. You know, they'll see.
And I was looking at your Tapology page. It lists your birthday as being next month. And we've seen what you've been able to accomplish, you know, in 21 years here in just a short amount of time as a pro. Where do you think you will be, say, 12 months from now?
Champion.
Obviously, the bantamweight division, it's a quick, you know, rise up in lower weights at Bellator. You know, have you mapped out? Is it just a thought of, hey, I know another win or two, I should be right there at minimum in a number one contender fight?
I'm not 100% sure, and I'm not. You know, I'm confident in my abilities. You know, I'm honest in my assessments, and I'm prepared in preparation. So I'm ready for whatever is going to be thrown at me. But February 15th. John Dumas on the list. There's a job to get done. The job will get done. And then after that, we'll see. You know, like I said, you know, what people fail to realize is this fight coming up, I just got matched up with John Dumas like probably about 4 weeks ago or for a month time period. Bellator, you know, they won't tell me any names, but like 8 people turned down a fight with me. So it was hard for them to even get a matchup from me. So he's talking about why would I accept this fight. A lot of people didn't accept the fight with me. I'm not out here, you know, picking and choosing. Do you have a name for me? Okay, let's go.
Do you take that as a compliment that people are turning you down?
I don't really know how I take it. You know what I mean? This sport's obviously extremely diverse, you know, different mindsets, different attitudes. People are in it for all different reasons. So I don't knock anybody. I respect every man that gets into that cage. You know what I mean?
What's your reason for being an MMA fighter?
I want to be the greatest mixed martial artist ever.
And anyone who follows you on social media and your Instagram feed, which is at Kimble Mike, you'll see there's a post you have, your most recent post, where you talked about, it's on my shoulders, I have them proud where they come from now, and you use the hashtag, your nickname, the Savage. So how did you get the nickname?
So, you know, as a kid, you know, getting in trouble and things like that, it was always like, oh, Mike's a savage. And then one day my coach pulled up the definition of savage, and the savage means, you know, it's like an untamed, animalistic, like ferocious, fierce, like force of nature type of thing, uncontrolled, things like that. So it was like, you know, there's a lot of people that are savage, but you're the savage. So just stayed with it. And that post, I got my city on my back. You know, I come from a community where, you know, you don't really hear too many positive things. You don't see anybody doing anything positive. And everybody is in Waterbury because they had to be there, not because they want to be there. You know, now I see 203, you know, in people's bios. I see it all over the place, and it makes me feel good, you know. I see people even repping not the 203, where they're from. You know, I see young dudes putting, like, I don't know, their area code. And that didn't come from them doing it. That came, oh, Mike Hobbs, you know, 203, and then that happened.
We obviously, this is in your backyard here at the Mohegan Sun. Is there something about this fighting at Mohegan that is special to you?
You know, at first I kind of it was kind of just like whatever, you know. I'm fighting wherever I fight is wherever I fight, so it's just it doesn't really matter to me where I fight. I fought in you know, hostile territories and things like that before as a kid. But I just feel like it's good for the community. You know what I mean? I'm glad to be a part at Mohegan Sun on a double packed event. You know what I mean? There's a rich history of the sport in Mohegan Sun, in combat sports period. You know, you got great fights like Mickey Ward and Arturo Gatti and things like that. So I'm happy to be a part of, I'm happy to be a part of something like that. But I don't really try to look too into it, because all that other stuff, the lights, the crowd, the noise, the backyard, the this, the that, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. We still have to fight.
And, of course, this event is going to air on the Paramount Network. Also streams on DAZN. It is Bellator 215 coming on Friday night. Mike, I really appreciate time. Let all my listeners know where they can follow you on social media and, of course, those sponsors that help support you.
Yeah, man. I appreciate you having me on the show. You guys can follow me at Kimbo Mike on IG and at Kimbo Mike on Twitter.
And there you have my conversation with Mike Kimble. I really appreciate him taking some time out to talk to me about his fight coming up here on Friday night as he takes on John Duma. And, you know, Mike Kimble is a guy. He's got a lot of eyes on him. But the ultimate question with Mike Kimble, and really we're not going to know until we actually see it happen, is what happens if he potentially gets taken down. And look, I think that John Duma is likely going to be a guy that's going to look to take him to the ground. And speaking of John Duma, I had a chance to talk to his manager, Tyson Chardy. Of course, I've had a chance to talk to Tyson here on the show in the past, and we talked about a wide range of topics. Obviously, we talked about his two clients that are fighting here at Bellator. Of course, on Friday night, he has John Duma. On Saturday night, he has Justin Sumpter. Of course, Justin Sumpter looking to bounce back from that loss from the Contender Series. So I'm going to let you hear my conversation with Tyson Chartier as we talked about the guys that he has fighting this weekend. Also, we talked about a wide range of topics, including the flyweight division, as he's got one guy, Mitch Raposo, who has been a stud flyweight as an amateur. So you'll hear my conversation with Tyson Chartier as we talk about a wide range of topics. Tyson, man, I appreciate you sitting down here. Of course, this is your area here up in the Northeast. I made my way up from Florida, so a little colder up here, but it's all good. It's nice and warm here inside Mohegan. Of course, coming up, you got John Duma here this weekend. Huge fight for him on Friday night against Mike Kimble. Mike is a guy that obviously he's made a huge impact, right from the start with his knockouts. Odd matchup to me. I'm surprised that this is the route Bellator wanted to go.
Yeah, it's kind of an old school classic grappler versus striker matchup. So it's bringing us back to our roots. But generally speaking, we try to keep the high level guys in New England away from each other like this so early on. But I think given the stage that we're on, it's a main card televised bout for Bellator. The money's substantially higher for the guys, so I think it makes sense, and it'll catapult one of the guys, and the other guys will still be young enough to regroup and bounce back from it and kind of hopefully take advantage of the platform that they were given, even with the loss. But yeah, I mean, we were excited about it. I know Duma said in an interview he didn't think they'd accept it, obviously there's still a lot of unanswered questions about Kimble. He's so young, he's super athletic, he seems like a really nice kid. He hasn't been tested yet as a pro. He's just had two quick knockouts, which props to him. He earned those knockouts. But, I think Bellator's probably got a lot of questions. Like, how does this kid deal with adversity? How does this kid deal with, some bad spots in a fight? Can he come back after losing a round and win a round? Can he go three rounds? Like, these are questions that they probably have. And I think they brought in the right guy, like Duma, to really see where he's at. Duma's... I've said before, he's basically like the Jim Miller of the Northeast MMA scene. He's a blue collar lunchbox type of guy. He's gonna come to work. He's gonna get in your face, and whether you win or lose, you're gonna get in a fight. So,
yeah, it's the thing with Kimble, and it's odd you see this. He had a rough amateur career, and then he turns pro, and then the 6 second knockout. Then I think it was a 6 second knockout. I mean, it's, and he's a guy that's probably going to have a lot of people in the seats on Friday night. So that's definitely what I'm looking forward to. You also got Justin Sumpter on this card as well. Of course, Justin, I had a great conversation with him. I thought it was interesting talking about being at Glover's gym and working with him. Of course, he's worked with Nick Newell as well. But this is kind of, he's trying to bounce back.
Yep.
I mean, is that kind of the what's been going on at camp is how is he going to bounce back?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's – you saw what he did after the last time he fought for Bellator. You know, I was on the other end. I wasn't managing him at the time. His pro debut was against Tim Caron. And, you know, he brought it to Tim. And I thought the fight was – it was close to being stopped. And then Tim just gutted it out and then ended up winning the fight. And then Justin ripped off six wins. You know, you saw what he did. And, you know, he's improved tremendously under Nick. You've seen him every fight, he gets a little bit better. And even in that last loss, you know, he fought Ian Heinsich, who's no joke. The guy's a legitimate, you know, UFC contender. He'll probably be ranked soon. I do believe in his skill set. And you see Justin was winning that fight. He just made a move, you know, one mistake. He got a little high on the back, fell off, and then, you know, got under a heavy wrestler that hits hard. And, you know, that's what happens. But I think he learned from it. He, you know, he didn't shy away. I think Nick was really smart. He's like, listen, I want him to take some time off, rest his head, really heal, rather than doing what some other coaches would do, which is like, let's bounce back right away. I think Nick really took a smart route. You know, we're looking at, you know, this was in July, and he didn't even let him do any contact for a few months. So he was just laying low, chilling. And, you know, so I think it was really smart. I'm excited for him to bounce back. You know, he liked the matchup. Nick liked the matchup. It's almost a hometown fight for him. You know, and he even said it today. We were walking down to get his photos done, and he goes, this is a lot smaller than I remember. So, you know, you can tell that's maturity in a fighter. You know, the first time you walk into the arena and you see that Bellator cage, and you're kind of a little bit overwhelmed. The lights are brighter than you thought they would be. The cage is bigger, and you're looking around, and you're kind of in awe. And it was cool to see him walk in and be like, yeah, it's smaller than I remember. And it's like, well, that's because you're growing up. You know, you're becoming a veteran now. You know, you get six or eight fights under your belt. This is your ninth fight. You know, before you had just amateur fights. So I'm excited for that. That'll be Saturday night.
Saturday night, we got Daly and Page. You're a coach. You know, when the betting odds came out for that one, when Page came as a 3.5-1 favorite, I was surprised. I didn't expect that. I thought he'd be the favorite. I didn't think he's, but from your perspective, is Michael Page one of the hardest matchups to prepare for?
I mean, guys like that, you just, you know, I think Brendan Ward could have beat him. I mean, sorry, he fought Daly. Sorry, he fought Daly, but yeah, he could be him. But yeah, I mean, it's tough because when guys are like unorthodox like that, you're always in danger. You know, there's always that like crazy shot that could come that you don't see, and you get dropped. But I think with that, a lot of the guys lose the fight before it happens. You know, they get in there, they believe, they see the hype train, they see how skilled he really is. But I think the fight's lost a lot of times before the fight happens. But I don't see that happening with Daly. I mean, that's a really good bet. You know, throw 100 down on Daly, and I think it's a pick 'em fight. If I had to really lock it in, I'd say it's a pick 'em fight. I mean, Daly has way more experience. He's fought way higher level competition throughout his career. You know, he's kind of been in these moments a lot, and I think, you know, MVP is kind of the, you know, is Daly going to pass the torch or not? I think that's what we're going to see. But if I had to, you know, someone was forcing me to make a decision, I would go with Daly on it just because I think he's a little bit more, I could say, solid in the fundamentals. He's not relying on anything flashy to win. Like I just see like he's got more meat and potatoes than any, and he's such a crafty vet that I don't see him getting caught by, you know, getting pulled into that game and getting caught with something tricky. But I mean, he could very well do it though.
To me, the interesting thing will be on Friday at the ceremonial weigh-ins. You know, because I asked Mike Mazzulia, I said, hey, we got extra security on? And he's like, no. He goes, but we'll have a conversation.
Yeah.
And it goes back to the Burt Watson line. You know, you don't get paid on weigh-in day.
Yeah.
You get paid by fighting on fight day. And it's, you know, it's a fight everyone's talking about. I mean, I'm really interested. Is there a local fighter on this card that you kind of are interested to see that's not obviously represented or coached by you that you're interested in?
Honestly, like we were just talking about this the other day. Like I don't even know who else is on the undercards for the most part. We were going through that. Like, I know there's a lot of guys from Connecticut, Western Mass. You know, you got Pat Casey fighting again. It'd be interesting to see how he does. You got Vincius on again. You got Cameron Lachinoff, who's always been a tough fighter. I think we just had our head in the sand so much
I tell you, the name that got mentioned to me earlier, and apparently he's a good ticket seller, is Billy Goff. He's 1-0, and he's fighting Ryan Hardy Evans. That was a name that kind of maybe...
Where's Billy Goff out of it?
Apparently he's local. He's somewhere around here, and apparently he's fought a lot of amateur.
Okay.
And that was one name that was kind of said to me of like, hey, you know, pay attention to this guy because apparently he's a pretty good ticket seller. That's on Friday night. You know, then on Saturday night, when it comes to those prelims, Tyrell Fortune, he's not a local guy. But
yep.
Definitely a guy that you know has kind of my thought process there, and then I'm interested in Eric Silva, first fight since out of the UFC.
How he looks lean. You know, I see him around the hotel. He looks really lean. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how he does. He was always the poster boy for USADA sniff tests, but I don't know if he was doing anything, but he just. He was kind of the example a lot of people used when how he looked before USADA and then how he looked after.
But he looks
good now.
Yeah. The thing with him, though, was he'd always beat the lesser competition.
Yeah.
And then he got that step up and couldn't do it. So that's a fight that interests me. Of course, you've got Rob Font, one of your guys, who actually came up in an interview I did earlier this week with Ricky Simon, who, Ricky said, hey, I want a top 10 guy. I'm looking at top 10. Rob's the only guy without a fight. And I know we were talking about this. Like, hey, man, I like that call out. That's a smart call out.
You know, if I was on Ricky's side, I would say the same thing. Like, if you have a guy, he's newly ranked. He just beat a ranked guy. You don't want to fight down. You know, it's always a risk to fight down. But sometimes you have to. Like, Rob's not in a position where he can just sit. You know, we want to get paid. Like, Rob's, you know, rankings are cool. But we're trying to put money in the bank. And he's, you know, you don't get that by just waiting to fight guys ranked above you. You know, I think Rob brings a skill set to fighting that is going to be a challenge for a lot of the other top 15 guys. You know, he's obviously, you know, he's lost three times. Some people have seen him struggle in certain things. But the Rob I know, he's only lost when he lost focus. You know, the focused Rob Font, like, put him in against any of those top 15 guys tomorrow, and I'm confident he can win the fight. But, you know, Rob just needs to show up for 15 minutes, and he knows that. And I think that was a good call by Ricky Simon. I mean, if they want to do that fight, we'll gladly welcome into the top 10 ranks and let him fight for it. But I don't think it's a great matchup for him. You know, he's obviously a tough, greedy fighter. I mean, I think he's really, you know, you look at his record, he hasn't fought the level of competition that Rob has. I mean, he's fought really smart in the IF fight. That's how you have to fight that kid. That's not going to be an exciting fight. Like, that's how he had to fight. That was kudos to him. But I think if you look at a lot of his wins, he hasn't really fought the level of competition that Rob's fought. He's 15-1, but against, you know, some, I'd say, like, the A-minus guys. And, you know, Rob's been fighting the A guys. And he's just, unfortunately, he's lost to the A-plus guys. So I think that would be, I think, a step up in competition for Ricky. You know, I like the matchup for Rob. You know, I break down a lot of video, and I always study opponents. And, you know, I think it's going to be, he can't stand with Rob. And I think he knows that. So he's going to have to try to take him down. But, you know, good luck trying to take Rob down when he knows you're going to try to take him down. You know, Sun Tzu surprised him a little bit, you know, and I just... You know, I like the matchup. So it was a good call-out by him, but not a smart stylistic call-out. And that's no shame on Ricky. Obviously, he's super talented. But I just think, you know, Rob's ready to make that next push. And I think that a lot of people that think he's a stepping stone just because he's got a number next to his name are in for a rude awakening.
Little known fact, Rob's actually originally from my hometown of Tampa, Florida.
Yes.
Made his trip up there. You also got another Tampa guy who made the trip up there, and Andres Cooley.
Cooley.
Man, a great personality with that kid.
He's a savage. He's so funny. He's just a character. Like, you know, he's great to have around the gym. He's always like lighthearted. He's just fun. He's like super appreciative of everything you do. You know, he just got a win a couple weeks ago. It was a split decision. He fought horrible. He knows that. But he still got the win, you know. And I told him in the locker room after the fight, I go, that's the best kind of fight you can have for a young fighter, is you win a fight, but you learn a lot from it. But you still got the W, you know. So I'm excited for his next fight. And right now he's just enjoying spending time with his daughter and healing up a little bit and looking at his wounds. And then he'll be back in there trying to get on the Combat Zone card.
And, of course, you've got a lot of guys up there in the Northeast that are developing. You know, we've talked about Brent Marotte.
Yeah.
He's been off to a great start. He was supposed to fight Combat Zone, but then the opponent kind of didn't happen for him there. You know, there's times where I would never want your job, you know, when you have a fight that doesn't come together, say it's week of, or I don't know, day of the fight when, you know, opponent doesn't show up. Is that the worst conversations you got to have?
I mean, it's not the best conversation. The worst conversations, I mean, I'm sure there's worse ones. The worst one is, like, I'd say the worst one I ever had was when we were cutting the last half pound in England and we found out Ian Edwistle was out. Oh, and you're like, all right. So we just flew over to England. We flew our whole team out there. We cut weight and now we're not even going to fight. So that's tough. But, you know, when they pull out on fight week, it's just super frustrating. But, like, you know, Mitch Raposo just had his pro debut, canceled the morning of the fight.
I saw his Facebook post. I was like, oh,
yeah, honestly, it's just part of the sport. But, like, it's almost like a blessing sometimes for these young fighters to go through that so early, because then they don't get so shaken up when something doesn't go according to plan. If you have five fights in a row and everything goes A to B, perfect, the camp goes great, there's no injuries, the weight cut was easy, you knock them out in 10 seconds and everything's great. Now what do we do next time? Same thing. Like, no, you got to be able to deal with some adversity. You got to be able to handle the curveball. So I think dealing with adversity early on when it's not having, like, a huge, huge impact is actually good in the long run. It's hard to get them to understand that, but, you know, Brendan, we laugh, and Brendan just fought on the last CS card, and he was about to walk, and then they're like, actually, you're going to be a swing bout. And he was, like, ready to throw a fit. He's like, because he was so mad, because he was, like, ready to go. He's all hopped up. The adrenaline's going. He wants to go out there and kill someone. And then they're like, actually, you're going to fight in 2 hours. And he's just like, and I just sat him down. I'm like, listen, man, like, the reality is, like, this is part of the sport. I go, and the guy over there in the other locker room, the same thing just happened to him. So now it's whoever deals with it better, you know? It's just, it is what it is. So, yeah. For young fighters, I think the adversity is really good.
I thought the interesting thing when I talked to Mitch prior to that fight, and part of the conversation was about kind of the future for him. You know, yes, he's a solid 125er, but we all know what's going on in the industry. Mm-hmm. And he said, he's like, look, you know, I've had the conversation with Tyson, and, you know, I'm going to work my way up to 35. I mean, is that kind of the conversation you're having with a lot of your fighters now that are at that 125 weight of, like, guys, you know, if the UFC's not in the 125-pound business long-term, outside of one championships and regional shows, there's not really a big player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I've had the conversation with Carlos Candelario, with Tateki, and with Mitch. Is, you know, Tateki's won a bunch of fights at 35. He has a split decision loss to Beal at 35 in the UFC. Like, he's fought most of his career there, you know, and for local pay, it doesn't make sense for him to cut down to 25 anyway. And then Carlos, you know, he's a young kid. He was cutting to 25. He wasn't having hard cuts, but, you know, it wasn't easy. So for him to settle into 35, he's never really lifted much. It'll be easy for him. And then Mitch is just turned 20 years old. Like, when I was 20 years old, I was wrestling at 145. You know, like, he's going to grow into his body. He's never really lifted. His coach, Brian Raposo, put him in a new strength and conditioning program. So he's going to try to bulk up a little bit. But, I mean, the reality is, like, long-term, Mitch staying at 125, going from a 19-year-old frame to being a 25-year-old, your body just changes. Yeah. You get denser, you get that man strength, you just grow. You just become a man versus a teenager. And so I think long-term, it was going to be hard to keep him at 25 anyway. So now he's just going to do it a little sooner than we would have. So I'm not too much worried about that. And I think, though, you know, he'll do great at 35. You know, you see a lot of the guys that do 35 that are successful in the UFC, they've all done well at 35 too. The guys that do 25.
Yeah.
You know, Benavidez has success at 35. You see, I think Pettis is still going to, you know, he's had success at 35. You know, he didn't do well against Rob, but it was just a bad matchup.
Yeah.
He's still going to probably build up his frame a little bit and then settle in to be a good 35er. So I don't necessarily think, like, it's the end of the world. And then you see these guys that struggle to stay at 45 forever, like Poirier, McGregor, all those guys, they move up to 55 and they do better. You see Mikey Chiesa, you know, go from 55 to 70 and now he's beaten ex champions, you know? I think the performance of these guys will improve without the weight cut.
Yeah.
But it's just a matter of changing the perception to the matchmakers that, like, no, no, this isn't a 25er that came up. This is a legitimate 35er that can compete at 35. Because that's some of the feedback I've gotten already about some of the guys. It's like, well, we need, like, a legitimate 35er for this one. This guy's tough. And I'm like, well, you know, my guy's 8-0 amateur at 35 against guys who are undefeated as a pro now. Like, does that not count? And, you know, it's just, I think you just got to establish him as a 35 now, get him some quality wins at 35 and show that, like, listen, like, he can make 25 if he had to, but he'll do really well at 35 too.
Yeah, I mean, it's clear. We know what's happening. It's very obvious. I mean, we can, you know, when you see a guy like Dustin Ortiz get cut, I mean, and now he's in a terrible situation.
I mean, I just feel so bad for those guys and their families. Like, they spend this whole career building up to something, that climbing this mountain, and then they just move the goalpost. It's
I'll tell you this: doing marketing for a bar that shows UFC pay-per-views, when it was a flyweight, hardest fight to get people to come out for. I mean, it's just I get it from UFC's aspect of why they're doing it. I mean, I get it. You know, it's just, you know, at the end of the day, there's just some fights fans just don't care for. You know, I mean, if it's a wrestler just going to, you know, take a dude down, you know, they don't necessarily care for it. They want to see, I was having this conversation with somebody earlier today, they want to see Aaron Pico, where Aaron is going to go out there, and God knows why he won't use his wrestling, but he's not going to be in a boring fight. And that's, you know, I mean, and there's been some great 125-pound fights, but
I feel like they could have gotten a little creative with it. Like, if they're not, rather than cut the division, why didn't they do, like, bring back 8-man tournaments in different places? Do stuff like that. Like, these guys all need to eat. They are exciting. Like, they're never going to gas out. Like, I'd rather watch a 125 fight than some of these heavyweights fighting that gas out in the first round and look really sloppy. You know, I don't know.
I mean, you can look at what Bellator's doing with their tournaments. Yeah, you see what they did heavyweight.
I don't love it. I don't love it. It's so long.
That is my one complaint is it takes. I mean, what, the heavyweight tournament was a year, I think, from the very first fight to the end fight. I think if you could limit that time down, and, you know, if you could, you know, but the other part of it is, you know, how quick do you want these fights? I mean, if you look at the old school Bellator tournaments, the problem was, I mean, you were fighting three times in 90 days.
Yeah.
And if you're having to cut a lot of weight, and there were so many times you'd hear where guys would just, you know, they couldn't make weight. But I'm a fan of the tournament.
You know, I like do the one night eight man tournaments. I know some commissions will approve that.
You're going to the commission shop.
What?
You're the commission shop.
I know Rhode Island had approved that. They were gonna allow it. I know Oklahoma just did a couple years ago. Brock lost in the finals. Brock Larson. But I think it's like we've come far enough that I think, you know, if you gave the 25ers an option between getting cut and doing something like that, you know, and then you could build interest into it. Now you're going to get fresh eyes at something different. But I mean, I feel like they could have done something other than what they did.
Yeah, I mean, I remember, God, this had been 3 years, 4 years ago. I heard CS was looking at a 225-pound tournament.
I heard, so the way it got positioned to me was the 225 was they were going to try to build the division around Rebello. And then...
Yeah, I remember three of the names I remember that were being thrown out there.
Pat Rebello,
Tyler King, and Diekman.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know if Diekman would have made, but...
Because they knew, because they first off knew the hatred between Diekman and King.
Yep.
That would sell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that never got expressed to me. The only thing I expressed to me was creating a cruiserweight division and having Greg fight for the title. And then once we heard that, like, the UFC had no plan at all of ever doing a 225 at the time, we were like, well, we're not going to cut weight to do nothing, you know?
Yeah.
So we weren't interested in that anymore. We just moved Greg to heavyweight. But I did hear they were looking at a 170 tournament, like a one night eight man, and we were trying to figure out how it would work. Because my concern there is, if you have a legitimate, like, UFC prospect, you know, you're building these guys a certain way, it might not make sense to jump in blindly to an eight-man bracket, fight three times in one night. You don't know who you're going to fight, and it's going to stay on your record forever. And, you know, you might end up losing to a guy that you would have no business losing to just because you got hurt in the first fight, or, you know, you got lumped up, or you gassed out because you had a hard fight and he had an easy fight. So I think there would have been challenges there. So we were talking about some ideas on like, well, how can the first fights, you know, almost like the Ultimate Fighter, be exhibitions and not go on record, and only the only fight that would be like a legit 3-round fight would be the finals, you know, and then, okay, it's two guys that have fought twice that night and they're going to fight each other in the finals, that'll go on your record type thing. But we never even got past the planning stages for that, because I think that's when Access came in.
Yeah, I'm a fan of the tournaments. Give me more tournaments. You know, I just, and probably because we just don't see it in MMA. It's just we don't see it. But Tyson, man, I really appreciate the time. I know it's a busy 48 hours for you here. So I really appreciate the time. Of course, let everyone know where they can follow yourself on social media, and of course, Top Game Management.
Yeah, Tyson, I think it's Tyson_Chartier on Instagram, and then Top Game Management on Instagram as well. So keep you updated on everything.
And there was my conversation with Tyson Chartier. I really appreciate him taking some time out to talk to me about a wide range of topics there. As you know, one of those just kind of conversations that went a little all over the place there, but always great to talk to Tyson about his clients and, of course, what's going on with him. Of course, also the coach of Rob Font and Calvin Kattar. So, always appreciate Tyson's, time to talk with me. Coming up next, you're going to hear my conversation with the head man of the MMA Lab out in Glendale, Arizona, John Crouch. I chance to chat with him about his fighters that will be competing this weekend at UFC Phoenix and a wide range of other topics. Joining me now here on the MMA Report is the man, the head coach of the MMA Lab. Of course, last week on the show we had Henry Corrales and Eddie Cha. Now we got John Crouch on the show. John, man, I appreciate the time. I know it's a busy week for you with all the fires you got in terms of the UFC card this weekend. So I really appreciate it, man. How's things been?
Good, really good. Thanks for having me on. It's not too bad. It doesn't really start till tomorrow. And, everything's kind of everybody's got their little system, so we're good to go.
First off, I mentioned I had Henry and Eddie both on the show last week. Obviously, you've seen the growth of Henry Corrales since coming to your gym. What has really stuck out to you about the growth of him as a martial artist?
The fact that he was willing to put in the work and change some things. And make a difference, you really got to attribute it to Henry and credit all his hard work to. That's really what you got to pay attention to, is that he was willing to change some things and take a risk and make it better. So that's what really stands out to me, is what a cool, brave human he is.
Yeah, I thought one of the most interesting things that Eddie was telling me, and I knew how much Henry does read books. He's like, yeah, but he doesn't have a TV in his house, which is kind of amazing for a lot of people. And, of course, Eddie is a guy that you brought in. I remember Eddie had told me a story a long time ago where, he was working with Francisco Rivera. You saw him, and then ultimately you decided that, hey, I want to bring this guy to my gym. Was there something about Eddie you saw that you said, hey, man, he'd be a great addition to the team?
Well, we're Jason House is – manager, and he works with a bunch of our guys, and he had worked with Eddie before, and we were looking for someone, and he recommended Eddie, and we watched some films, and then Eddie started coming out on the weekends for, 5 or 6 weekends in a row, driving from California, and we hit it off, and, obviously he's super talented and super knowledgeable, and it went great, and now here we are. He's a good guy, and you couldn't ask for a more knowledgeable person to be in charge of that striking program. He really knows his stuff.
Before we kind of get into the fires you got coming up this weekend, I was wondering, how would you describe your coaching philosophy?
I don't know what that means really. I try to put people in the best spot they have to succeed. It's about being consistent. It's about showing up every day and doing the work and, not getting too down and not getting too up and just keep going through. So I'd say more than anything, it's just about consistency of effort.
I mean, how much of your job is just trying to figure out the mindset of your fighters and knowing what's going to motivate them and what's not going to motivate them?
Well, there's only so much you can do with that. Like, they are who they are, And so, as we go and we figure out, these things work, and so we're going to do this more, and this didn't work, so we're going to do that less. Really, I feel like I'm just a plumber, I put the water where it's supposed to go, and they're the ones that make the artwork out of it. So You know, I just try to get them in places where they're comfortable to do their best work.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that I tend to kind of pay attention to is the betting odds on a fight. And earlier this week, when I saw that Alex Caceres was a 3-1 underdog, I was shocked. Point out shocked. I don't know if that's the first time you've heard it, but is there any kind of thoughts that go through your mind?
No, I don't care. I mean, it's just people's opinions. You know, I think people love the idea of Cron Gracie coming in and just doing his thing and kind of old school style, and that's fine. You know, the guys are going to fight, and those odds don't matter at all. And really, they're just other people's opinions. So I don't ever really know. Like, people tell me stuff that kind of shocks me because I don't really pay attention to it. You know, I know there's certain things we have to do to be successful, certain things we can't allow him to do. But that's about it.
You've been around Alex for a long time.
I think this is fight number, I'm sorry to interrupt. This is fight number 14 for us, I think.
I mean, what is the difference between Alex at fight 14 as opposed to fight one with you?
Well, you know, a lot of maturity. He's worked a lot on his ground game. You know, he moved out to Phoenix to do kind of the same thing that Henry Corrales did. And I would say he's more mature and he's more creative than ever. And he's better at the things that he wasn't as so good at when we started.
One of the things that I didn't know about you until you were on the Valor Hour with Tim Loya a couple months ago is your Tennessee roots. And, of course, that's Scott Holtzman. You know, with his Tennessee roots, he's got Nick Lentz coming up on Sunday. I mean, what's been going on with Hot Sauce in terms of getting ready for this fight?
Oh, he's had a great camp. I don't remember Hot Sauce having a bad camp ever. That guy's a consummate professional. There won't be any stones unturned in Scott Holtzman's past. You know, when he looks back on his career, he's going to know that he did everything he could to be great, however it turns out. So he's had a great camp, and I'm super excited about this matchup.
In terms of Nick Lentz, I mean, obviously he's been around a long time. I mean, is it one of those things where is it kind of easy to prepare for a guy like him just because you've got so much footage and you know what there's not going to be a ton of tricks that he's going to throw out there that you haven't seen?
Well, yes and no. I mean, if somebody does the same thing over and over again and they keep catching everybody in it, they must be pretty dang good at it. So, you know, people are like, oh, you know what Nick Lentz is going to do. But yeah, but he does it successfully against everybody. So then the issue becomes, how are we going to be different than the people that he used it against? So, yeah, there's plenty of film on Nick, but he is a professional. He shows up every time to fight and does a good job. So, you know, you can't discount people because they've been around a long time.
Another fight you got on this card, Brian Barberena. It seems to be that I think it's more times than not. I feel like people just kind of keep counting him out and taking on Vicente Luque, who's been on an absolute roll here. You know, why do you think people tend to doubt Brian in fights?
Well, that's a great question. You know, I think he doesn't come off as maybe the most technical guy. Maybe it's just the matchup he gets. But he's another hard worker, and he's a tough cat, man. He's going to be in there fighting. You know, there's going to be no time in any fight of Brian's that you'll see him give up or, you know, maybe let off and not try. Like, he's going to be in there. So I think you always got to give him a good chance to be in there because he's going to scrap till the bell rings.
And, of course, another fighter, you got Courtney Casey. She's in a big fight against Cynthia Calvillo. What do you believe is the key for Courtney to get the win?
I think Cynthia really just overwhelms people with energy, in my mind. I think she's good, but I think she's just usually more energetic, more aggressive. So we need to match that energy. I think Courtney's better technically in all areas. But, you know, that doesn't mean too much when you get into a fight. So we have to match her energy, you know, not be overwhelmed by just sheer aggression, be able to respond to that, and then it should be, you know, it should be a good fight for us.
I'll be up in Connecticut for the Bellator events, and Michael Page and Paul Daly is just a fascinating matchup. I mean, I think we all understand it's going to be on the feet. From a coaching perspective, I don't know how much you sat there and watched Michael Page, but is there any? Has there been anybody else you've seen that's anything like him?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of athletes. I mean, he's had some great matchups. I like him. I think he's a talented kid, but he's still pretty young in his sport, you know? And the last guy he fought that he won a decision over showed some of those holes, how young he is. I think Israel Adesanya is a great athlete. He does great, amazing things in the ring. I think, you know, I mean, Sugar Sean in our camp, he's a great athlete. He does amazing things. I think it just depends on, I like him, but Paul Daly is a stern test. If Paul Daly puts one on your chin, it could be the last one you're going to see.
In terms of your gym, fighters outside of the UFC and Bellator, is there some fighters you got that got fights come up here in the next couple weeks that people should be paying attention to?
Well, you know, we just had the LFA. I don't know if you saw that, but we had three guys on the TV card for LFA, and they all won first-round stoppages, so it was a good night for us. And then, you know, some of our amateurs are coming up, and we have 7 people on the same card here next month, and then 3 on the Combates card in Tucson at the end of next month. So staying busy. You know, Dan Moret is going to fight on UFC Wichita March 9th. And then Bobby Moffitt and Chris Gritzmacher are both going to be on UFC Nashville March 23rd. So it's going to be a busy month. We always have something coming up, always have something to work towards. And that's the good news. You know, we always have some sense of purpose where we're going.
Coach, I really appreciate you coming on the show this week. Let everyone know they can follow your gym on social media.
Yeah, everything for our gym is at the MMA Lab. Facebook, Instagram, you know, Twitter. And we'd love to have you guys come check it out and follow us and support MMA in general. That'd be great.
Coach, I appreciate time, and good luck for all your guys this weekend.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. Have a good day.
And I appreciate John Crouch coming on the podcast to talk to me about what's going on at the MMA Lab in relation to this weekend's UFC Phoenix. But I'm going to wrap up this week's edition of the show, as you're going to hear my conversation with Nolan King. I had a chance to chat with Nolan about Bellator 215, Bellator 216. Also, we talked other topics in MMA, plus we talked a little bit about UFC Phoenix. So here's my conversation with Nolan King. Nolan, man, I appreciate you taking some time out to sit down and talk what's going on in MMA. And the way I learned of you was I started seeing your retweets coming in my timeline. And I was like, oh, and then kind of as I've gotten to this role of not really a beat reporter, more of a opinionated podcast thing, your timeline is great.
I appreciate that.
At MMA_Kings. If you ever want to know what fight's been booked, there's times where I'm like, that fight got booked? Really? And then be like from like 7 days ago.
Yeah. I try, man. That's kind of how it started out. I started out just kind of tweeting out the fight announcements. I felt like there wasn't one place you could go to see them all. You know, you had to, Junkie would put out a couple, and then Fighting would put out some, and a fighter would announce, on their social media. But, I just kind of did it for fun. I just started out doing that, and people really got on board with it. And, you know, a couple of years later, here I am.
And one of the things that I love is you sit there and say, hey, reported by this person, reported by that person, to give them the
absolutely.
Credit. I mean, and that doesn't always happen in art and shit.
Right. Yeah, no, you know, I've had some conflicts in the past where, you know, big sites, I actually had a couple sites, write things like according to a report on Twitter, and they would not cite me. And, you know, I'd ask them about it, and, you know, I wouldn't get a response. That was kind of where my anger first lied in this whole thing, you know. But other than that, I mean, I understand people, they don't have eyeballs on everything. You know, if they make a mistake, that's not a big deal. It's just the way that they handle it afterwards. MMA Fighting was great always. You know, there was a few times where they didn't source me, or they sourced someone else that sourced me, thinking that it was the original. And they've always been great with getting back. You know, Junkie's been good. So it seems like that's under the bridge now. It's water under the bridge.
Yeah, I remember when I started in MMA, it would, at first, it would piss me off if you reported something. But then I was just like, you know what?
I don't control it.
Right.
I'm just not going to worry about it. All I can do is, and the thing I love what you've done is you've sat there and created a niche for yourself.
Sure.
You know? I have people reach out to me and say, hey, I want to be in MMA reporting. What do? I go, you got to find something that's unique.
Yeah, and you hit the nail right on the head there. You know, that's kind of what I did was it didn't seem at the time like it was a huge thing. Like, you know, I don't know how many people are interested in the first fight of UFC, you know, Chile, but it seemed like enough people were interested where I could enter that realm and try to, you know, fill a void that's in the MMA, you know, the industry or the coverage. And that's kind of what I did. And I think that's what I'd recommend for anybody that tries to get started is even if it seems like something that's not the biggest deal, if nobody's covering, hop on that. You know, there's so many people trying to do the same thing nowadays, you know, start out, you know, start your own thing and try to gain, see where people's interests go from that.
Yeah. It's, you know, I learned that when I started the MMA Report. Was and I guess it ultimately came from my first radio boss. He's like, look, you can't be the morning show host, you can't be an afternoon show host, and you can't be the night host. You can take things they do. And that's how, like, I sat there and said, okay, you know, you're talking, this is 2012. Mm. Bellator is not the hit thing to cover now like it is.
Sure.
And, you know, and so, and I found a little niche, and, you know, and I was grateful for people, you know, I have, you know, relationship with people junkie and fighting, mm-hmm. and they would always credit you, you know,
sure.
and literally that's all you want. Just,
yeah,
it's just get the name brand out there. But, I made my way up here to Connecticut, this morning here on Thursday morning. It's actually Thursday afternoon here where we're talking, you know, this Northeast scene like no other. You know, when I look at Friday's card, tomorrow's card, mm. and, people early in the show, they heard my conversation with Mike Kimball.
Mm.
Look, Bellator is not going to sit there and openly root who they want to win the fight.
Sure.
But you know this market.
Yep.
There is no more Brennan Ward as a ticket seller up here. They want Mike Kimball to win. But this is – it's an odd matchup if you're trying to develop Mike Kimball. Because
absolutely.
I'm sure you hear the same things I hear about Mike Kimball.
Yep.
What happens if he gets taken down?
Right.
And now you've got him in a fight against a guy who that's what he does.
Right.
When I talked to John Doom, I said, were you surprised he took this fight? He goes, yeah. He goes, I couldn't believe he took the fight. I asked Mike to respond, and Mike said, well, why wouldn't I take the fight? Mm. He wants to take on top challenges, but, man, it's interesting if Kimball gets taken down. Because look, this is my thought of it. I think you're going to see Duma rush in there, look for a double leg immediately.
Mm. Yeah, I totally agree with you. You know, I follow both these guys through their amateur fights, some of them, and, you know, you hit the nail right on the head that this is kind of an odd matchup. I mean, I feel like John is a higher risk than people are giving him credit for, and the reward, you know, for people on the national scene, see if Kimball goes out there and beats him, you know, they're going to say, okay, it was another guy that, you know, another guy with not a lot of experience that Kimball went out there and defeated in quick fashion, like, you know, whoop-de-doo. When in reality, you know, if they had handed him somebody that was maybe a little bit more of a veteran that was less dangerous, somebody that, you know, had experience, but, you know, Kimball could maybe, you know, get in there and engage and have a little bit more of a learning experience, you know, that would be one thing. But Duma's fired up as anybody. You know, you said you spoke to him. I spoke to him as well. And he sounds like, you know, he's not taking Kimball lightly, but he's also, you know, he's not counting himself out like all these other people are. He thinks he's going to go in there and win this fight.
Yeah, as we're recording the show, I have not seen the betting odds, which will be very interesting to see what they are.
Yeah, that would be interesting.
I think the odds out there is on Mitrione and Karatanov. Mm-hmm. Austin Vanderford, I had a chance to talk to him earlier. Interesting guy to talk to.
Oh, yeah.
Because you know it. It's in social media world, he is Mr. Van Zandt.
Yep.
And so it's one of those things of he's got all the pressure on him.
Mm.
It's kind of interesting that he ends up in Bellator, you know, because of – I was surprised he didn't get signed off the Contender Series.
Me as well.
I just thought, you know, oh, look, the fact of who his wife is.
Right.
I thought he would get in.
Right.
But one of the things that I did find very interesting that he said to me was, I said, what gets you more nervous, you fighting or her fighting? He goes, oh, her fighting. He said when her last fight, the morning of the fight, he called his parents and apologized to him. Says, I now know what you go through when you watch me fight.
that's pretty crazy, man. You know, you hit the nail on the head again. You know, Vanderfort talking to him today. You know, all these people that talk trash on the internet, they, you know, ridicule him with Mr. Van Zandt and try to demean what he's accomplished. I mean, if they went up and talked to that guy, there's no other result other than them walking away feeling like an asshole. The guy's the nicest person in the world.
You know,
he handles it totally professionally. He's not bitter at all. He's laughed off all of this criticism from the start. And, you know, he's somebody that I think, in addition to being promotable, having Paige VanZant, you know, as a kind of a side, you know, a factoid about him that obviously draws eyeballs to him and makes him notable, he's got the skills too. You know, he's somebody that's earned this position, I feel like. I feel like, you know, you hit the nail on the head when you said the Contender Series. He did really well. That was an exciting fight. He won. And then he had a fight outside of the Contender Series too where he knocked out a very tough opponent once again, and they still didn't sign him. So he made the most of the opportunity. He signed with Bellator. He's getting a big push on a main card, and more power to him.
Contender Series to me, and I know you do a lot with it, it's fascinating to me because I think there are times where I monitor the regional scene. I'm not like some other people, yourself. Other people really are knees deep in it, but there are fires I've seen go on that Contender Series, and I'm like, they're rushing them.
Right.
And I think I don't blame managers, because when you're talking about 5,000 to show, 5,000 to win,
totally.
Unless you're a ticket seller on a regional scene,
totally.
You're not making that kind of money.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, it's a tough, you know, it's kind of a, you know, you're stuck between a rock and a hard place where on one hand, you don't want to rush your fighter or put them in an opportunity where they are probably not going to succeed. On the other hand, you know, we've seen guys that have, you know, more than earned their shot in the UFC, like Chris Curtis, those type of fighters where, you know, they didn't even get that opportunity. So, you know, I think a lot of managers, fighters feel like they have to jump on it no matter when it comes. It's kind of unfortunate because I think that it's hindered a lot of prospects from becoming, you know, the best that they can be. We've seen, you know, mismanaged prospects from Sage Northcutt, you know, is a huge example where, you know, more isn't always better. You know, just because this guy looks good and he's had a few fights doesn't mean that, you know, taking constant steps up in competition is going to be the best for his long-term career. I mean, a lot of the guys that we've seen succeed the most have had losses on the regional scene at early stages or mid-tier stages where they had great learning experiences from it. So, you know, I agree with you. The Contender Series seems like, you know, there's some guys on there that definitely that's a great slot for them. And then there's other guys where it's a little too early, you know? So,
I mean, it's a problem. The thing I see is if you are a fighter, let's say you have two fights, what's the advantage of going to Contender Series? You want your fourth fight to be in the UFC?
Yeah, I don't understand that. You know, the heavyweight, you could maybe make an argument, you know, just because of the regional scene's not great. But even with a guy like Greg Hardy, I mean, we saw it in his UFC debut, you know. I think a few other fights on the regional scene, even if he, you know, knocked guys out like he was doing, he continued the streak, you know, it would have done him a world of difference. He wouldn't have – I take him at his word for that, you know, that he was an inexperienced fighter who threw an illegal knee. And I don't think that that would have necessarily happened if he had taken a couple more fights in the regional scene.
I didn't like the way that was handled.
Yeah.
I thought there were people – look, and not to talk about outside of MMA,
sure,
with him, just the MMA. When I saw people going, you know, just – I'm like, it's it, you know, oh, it's immaturity. Inexperience. Mm. Because I would sit there and say, if it was a 3-0 fighter, if it was vice versa, if it was, you know, Crowder who was 3-0, would the reaction be the same? And that was my problem with
right.
it. But look, I'm still baffled the UFC got in the Greg Hardy business.
Yeah, me too. I mean, we were talking about, you know, different fight announcements and stuff, and I was the first one to break news on that one. And I felt like when I got the news of that, you know, I was shocked. You know, I was thinking to myself, what is the benefit necessarily of the UFC to do this? You know, I think even if it was controversial, I would think that they would want to pick a controversial subject that there was a whole contingency of people arguing for him too. And, you know, I think the majority of people have not been, you know, putting this lightly, have not been pleased with the UFC's decision to bring him in. And they did so. And I feel like not only did they do so, but they did it at such an early stage where it's come back to bite them with a fight like you just said, with the Crowder fight.
I'll tell you, when you talk to people around American Top Team, model citizen.
Yeah.
That's
sure.
You know, I remember leading up to his official UFC debut. That's, I asked several people, like, model citizen.
Right.
You know, but, you know, look, we'll see what happens. Let's get back to Bellator.
Sure.
Friday night, Mitrione Kharitonov. I would be surprised if this fight hits minute 7.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. You know, it's Mitrione's had a few fights now where, you know, the clear game plan has been for his opponent to try to drag him to the ground, push him against the cage, make things dirty. I don't see that Kharitonov, you know, implementing that type of a game plan. I mean, both of these guys are going to come, look to slang and bang, take each other out early in the first round, and I think it makes for a very exciting stylistic matchup for fans. It's a heavyweight division, and I think the odds makers are going to say somebody's going to go down, and I think that's what's going to happen.
Looking at the prelims, Steve Mallory obviously is a guy that sticks out to me. Yeah. Another guy, because I heard a little whispers about this kid earlier today, Billy Goff. Mm. Apparently he's a good ticket seller.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. You know, I saw his name get added, and I saw the response on social media from Facebook, from a couple other local regional media people that, you know, follow the regional scene even more closely than I do. And it seemed like it was a mass amount of people getting excited for his fight. I'm not super overly familiar with him, but yeah. I mean, hey, he might become a Bellator. They have their guys that they like to always throw on the prelims here, and some of them end up getting inked to actual contracts. So this might be his first step in that direction.
This is how Bellator builds a roster.
Yeah.
I mean, you use local ticket sellers. Mike Kimball's a perfect example.
Yeah.
Was brought in as a local ticket seller, comes in, 6-second knockout. Hey, let's give him to a multi-fight deal. You look at Toby Misek, who's fighting Eduardo Dantas.
Right.
He didn't initially get signed, but Nainoa Dung, who was on that Bellator card, has a great performance, signs it to a new deal. And it may be 3 years down the road, you could look at this prelims and go, that was the time they found him. Bellator 216 on Saturday. Look, it's the reason why I'm here.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Daly and Page. Were you like me and surprised on the betting odds of Page open up at a 3.5-1 favorite?
I was, and I try to always, when I'm viewing a fight, you have your opinions about it. The betting odds come out, and then you start to overthink it, I feel like. And if I go back to my original thought when this fight was first announced, before anybody gave me an opinion or maybe made me think of a new idea, I was having a tough time figuring out who I thought was going to win this fight. I thought that it was going to be even or leaning towards Paul Daly, maybe slightly. And here we are, and I don't know, I haven't checked the odds today, but the last time that I checked, I think it was like a 2-1 or 3-1 favorite, right?
Yeah, I think Daly last I saw was like at +175. There was an interesting tweet last week by Gerald Harris, who's a really good follow. He kind of puts these questions out there.
Yeah, he's great. I have to say his announcing has been good, too. I don't know if you've checked it out, but he's been doing some Fight Pass stuff, and I was impressed with him. He's a good guy to follow.
And this was back on February 5th. He says, do you think Michael Page is a top 10 welterweight? I believe so. That's my opinion.
Hmm.
If he wins this tournament, he's top 5.
Oh, I totally agree with you.
You look at the lower top 10 of the UFC welterweight rankings.
Yeah.
There's fights I say he wins.
Oh.
Now, look, he's
sure.
Ultimate unknown. What happens if he gets taken down? Which there is about a 0.001% chance this fight goes to the ground tomorrow. That's not a knockdown. I wonder who's in whose head.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you saw the square off yesterday.
I did,
Paul Daly extending his hand and MVP not shaking it. Daly shook Scott Coker's hand instead and turned to the crowd. Wouldn't even face off with him while MVP did his Venom Page hand gesture. So, yeah, it's tough. You know, sometimes when you throw emotion into that, guys can seem like they're fired up, like, oh, this guy's not in my head. You know, he doesn't have any mental edge over me. But in reality, they're getting themselves so worked up, so angry, and so ready to take somebody's head off that they might go for an extra, punch on their exchange or really try to take him out with some power shots early. So I'm hoping that, Daly's a seasoned enough veteran. But to answer your question of who's in whose head, I think MVP's got actually a little bit of, real estate in Paul Daly's head right now.
Earlier in the show, I had Mike Mazzulli on, and I said, are we going to have extra security on the stage tomorrow night for the ceremony of weigh-ins? And, he didn't say one way or the other, but basically saying, look, there will be a conversation that will be had with both fighters of, and it's the old Burt Watson line.
Yeah.
You don't get paid on weigh-in day. You get paid on fight night to fight. And so I'm picking Michael Page. When I talked to John Crouch about this, Page is such a unique challenge. It's Israel Adesanya. I think that this is young lion taking out the old lion.
Sure.
And I will tell you, as I was walking here to do this, Douglas Lima is in the building.
Mm.
And that will be an interesting matchup because I think Lima will be the true first takedown test. And it sounds like it's going to be announced that fight's going to be May 11th.
Yeah, that would be phenomenal. I mean, I just had told you when this first fight got announced what I thought the odds were going to be. And I thought that this was going to be that those odds would be that way because people would be doubting MVP, that they'd say, oh, this guy hasn't, he's only the toughest guy he's fought is David Rickles. And, doesn't have the takedown credentials that we've seen from other proven fighters. I'm actually picking MVP in this fight as well. I think the stylistic matchup makes just is you couldn't find a better matchup for MVP of a fighter of Paul Daly's caliber. I think is Daly going to go for a takedown? I don't see that happening. I like you said, there's a very small chance.
Look, you know this area is a boxing town.
Oh, big time.
If he goes for a takedown, he might get booed out of this building.
Mohegan fans are tough, man. I know you said you've covered some events in the past here. They're tough. Like, you'll see Mitrione Bader. I mean, Bader's first takedown, there were people screaming within the first 5 seconds. You know,
I was watching home. I was like, I right when that happened, and I knew it was unlikely Matt was going to get up. Like, this is what it's going to be for 15 minutes.
Yeah, it's brutal.
I mean, I don't blame Bader.
Oh,
but,
no.
But from a fan, like, I was talking to somebody in Bellator about this earlier today.
Yeah.
You can talk about Aaron Pico, whether you agree with how his career path has gone. But he's the guy that you go out of your way to watch fight.
Oh,
because
absolutely.
He's not in a boring fight. You know, there are certain fighters that fans are going to go, nah, good. I don't want to watch a fight because I know what it's going to be. But Aaron Pico, something crazy is going to happen. Either he's getting knocked out or you know, he's pulling the knockout. I mean, I just, you know, it's going to be a fun fight.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and you say that, you know, there's a certain fighters that are must-watch fighters. I mean, MVP might be Bellator's most you know, watch fighter because I have friends that don't even really follow the sport. They'll text me when Conor McGregor's fighting, or they'll text me, you know, if maybe Jon Jones was fighting. But I actually had two friends that texted me this week about asking me about MVP. You know, seems like he's extending beyond Bellator a little bit, which is something that we haven't necessarily seen from many of their fighters. You know, I saw him doing the media runs this week, and they had him on some, you know, pretty high profile podcasts and doing some stuff with Barstool Sports, which is a huge, you know, popular podcast.
Yeah.
Network for people my age and, you know, older. So I think that he's somebody that if he can keep winning, man, we might see him extend past the, you know, the get more popular than we've seen a Bellator fighter get, a homegrown Bellator fighter get in quite a while.
Look, I've said this. If I ran MMA promotion that at the stature of UFC Bellator level, I would not do any advertising on an MMA website. I'd put everything in Barstool Sports.
Yeah. Oh, they're great. You know, it's a Boston-based company. And, you know, I've followed them since I was a junior in high school, you know, and just to see how smart they've been with their business decisions and, you know, selling the company. David Portnoy, the CEO, sold the company. And now, you know, they're blowing up. And I think MMA's done a good job of integrating into their podcast system. We've seen UFCs get involved with them now. Bellator, Matt Mitrione, I don't know if you saw him today. He was wearing a Barstool Sports hat. He did a bunch of stuff with them this week, some cooking shows, stuff like that. So, yeah, you hit the nail right on the head. It fits right into the demographic of MMA.
The other fight on the main card Saturday night is Binnikoff and Congo. I'll say this, Binnikoff's getting paid real well based on that story that Paul Giff had out today.
I'm really surprised, you know. Because
this is my perception of it. He's getting that money because there's other guys coming with him that are being signed by Bellator.
There has to be something. You know, when that came out originally, when I just read it, you know, 2 hours ago sitting out here, I knew Minnikov would probably had a fat check coming his way, but I didn't know it was going to be that, you know, especially where it seemed like the contract issue that they were having, part of it, part of his delay of getting here was the fact that he wanted more money and, you know, he was taking the fights in Russia and he was trying to, I guess he had signed a contract that was based on a time, like a 3-year contract.
That's the way the old Bellator contracts were. Yeah.
So there was just this whole thing about him wanting to get paid more and restructuring. And so I assumed that maybe he had taken a little bit of a pay cut from what he was asking for, which, you know, $300K per fight for six fights is crazy. There has to be something else attached.
Okay. That's a figure. If I'm Bellator, I went out there. Because now that sends a message to every UFC free agent. Don't you want to come talk to us?
Yeah.
That's why I've never understood this thought process when a fighter is coming up on free agency and they're like, oh, I want to resign with the UFC. Mm. Why would you say that publicly?
Right.
Like, use your leverage.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. You know, sometimes silence is the best way to go, you know. And I've seen that too, and I feel like that you're essentially giving the UFC what they want. Like, the UFC doesn't have any incentive to give you more money if you're already saying that you're going to sign with them again. Like, if that's what they know you really want to do.
I've said this. Could you imagine if Michael Page became a free agent?
Yeah, that would be crazy.
Like, if I was and I know this week he's talked about loves Bellator, wants to be here, he's got a long-term deal, all that. I'm sitting there going, if I'm Michael Page's manager, I'm like, Michael, we're fighting this thing out. and we're going to see what you can get offered. Because if he wins this tournament, I mean, that's talking that then you would beat Daly, Lima, and look, it's going to be Roy. I don't see Fitch giving, you know, I think he goes through Fitch. I think he goes through Neiman Gracie.
Yep.
I mean, it's
definitely an easier side of the bracket where Rory's sitting right now.
It's probably the fight I probably want to see the most in the finals.
Yeah. I mean, that's something that I think would have the entire MMA world, the people, the Bellator haters, the people that are dropping, are willing to put Bellator down. Everybody would tune in for that one. That would be killer.
Yeah, it's outside. Anything on the prelims really sticks out to you on Saturday night?
On the prelims?
Yeah, I mean, Tyrell Fortune sticks out to
me. Sure, yeah. I think there's actually one fight that I think people should keep an eye on is Vinicius De Jesus. He's fighting a guy that's 1-0 named Rodolfo Barcelos. Mm-hmm. I had heard that on this card Dylan Danis was supposed to fight, and I had heard that Vinicius De Jesus was potentially the opponent that they were sorting for. They had De Jesus on MMA Junkie Radio calling him out. Bellator helped him do that interview. And now, sure enough, he's fighting a 1-0 third-degree Brazilian jiu-jitsu welterweight. So I think that's not necessarily a...
I remember when you put your tweet out about Dylan Danis.
Yeah.
And it was probably about, I don't know, a week before that.
Yeah.
That I knew that... I initially heard they wanted him on the January 26th card.
Right, that was also correct.
And then it was either one of these Bellator events. I believe it was going to be Saturday night. Mm. They wanted it on DAZN.
Yep.
But because of the whole Nevada Commission thing, which I have my feelings on it.
Yeah.
I think they're screwing him over.
Oh, yeah, totally.
You know, and some of the things I've heard recently about that, it's just, you know, at the end of the day, they're ruining this kid's career. Mm. I mean, you know.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at that whole scenario, he got it jumped on. Like,
that's the thing is,
you know, and it's like, why is everything else sorted out and this still?
What's he supposed to do? Stand there and let Khabib hit him?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. What would they have liked him to do better or different?
Yeah,
that would be the question that I would ask if I was on Danis's team. I'm sure they probably already have.
Yeah, well, he's represented by Mike Mersch, a former UFC lawyer, also now represents Conor McGregor.
Yep,
I guess we quickly talk about Sunday, the first card on Big ESPN, first main card. Kind of ironic that it's Cain Velasquez. And I don't know if you watched this scrum the other day. I've never seen Cain that hilarious.
Oh, he seems so laid back. He seemed so a little bit more open. You know, he was always a very serious guy. You know, it's not like he was necessarily not friendly towards the media, but he was a very, seemed very closed, not very open, not very one to joke around. And I agree with you. In that scrum, he was cracking jokes from the start. They were they were talking about the Suns and everything like that.
The Ford Escort line.
Yeah.
He's like, Ford Escort suck.
That was right. Didn't miss a beat.
And then I thought how open he was about pro wrestling.
Mm.
I didn't get the sense of he was a guy who was hiding anything.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So no, totally. Agree.
Anything else on the UFC card that interests you?
I mean, the Cron Gracie debut is something that I find interesting. He obviously had his fights in Ryzen, and now he's coming to the UFC against Alex Caceres. I think that's an entertaining fight. You know, I think the Vic versus Felder co-main event, somebody I would say might go down in that fight. I'm leaning towards Felder in that one, but Vic, you know, is somebody that's been counted out before, and more times than not, he's proven the doubters wrong.
And, of course, Nolan, really appreciate you sitting here. I'm sure we'll see each other here over the next 2 days a lot. But where can everybody follow you on social media? And, of course, I'd love to know about your new YouTube channel.
Yeah, absolutely. So you guys can follow me, as always, on Twitter at @MMA_Kings. You can follow me on Instagram, which is semi-new, at NolanKingMMA. I'm still getting the hang of that one, but I'm starting to figure out what the best content is to go on there. Facebook, Nolan King MMA, and also, like Jason said, I also have a YouTube channel now, which is also Nolan King MMA, so if you guys could follow me there, that would be great. And Jason, thanks for having me, man. It's been a while. It's been a long time coming. I've watched your videos for a long time, and you're a pro, man. Keep up the good work.
Awesome stuff there from Nolan King. I really appreciate him coming on the podcast to talk about Bellator 215, Bellator 216 also. We talked a little UFC Phoenix Contender Series. And look, if you're not following Nolan King on Twitter, definitely got to give that kid a follow. You know, he's someone I've had a chance to, you know, really over the past couple of years, you know, see him grow and just love the thing he's doing. And I love that art, those stuff he puts on Flow Combat in terms of, you know, letting you know exactly what fights have been booked over the last week, as sometimes you miss out on some things. So really appreciate Nolan King sitting down to chat with me. Before I get out of here on this week's episode of the podcast show, I just want to let you know, be sure to head over to the MMAreport.com, as I've got a bunch of content that is up there. I've had a chance to talk to a lot of fighters over the past couple of days that have fights coming up here. Jonas Flock, who fights on Saturday night at Lights Out Championship. Talked to Ricky Simon, which of course mentioned a little bit of that in the Tyson Chartier interview. Kyle Daukus, who fights on Saturday night for the CFFC middleweight titles, actually take on Jonathan Webb. Jonathan Webb stepping up in weight to take that fight. Talked to Colby Landers, Dakota Bush, Andre Hall. There's so much, Julian Arosa, Julius Angelikius, who fights on Friday night LFA. So there's a lot of content that you can check out there on the MMAreport.com. Also, look for post-fight shows following Bellator 215 and Bellator 216 on the MMAreport.com. So that's going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, which comes out every week on RadioInfluence.com.
This is a Rush the Field quick fix on Radio Influence.
Justin Fields, we were all expecting this to happen. He received his waiver from the NCAA, meaning he doesn't have to sit out a year, which would be the normal rules. He can play immediately for Ohio State this year. That's huge for them. Of course, it's monumental for the Buckeyes that they're going to have Justin Fields as their starting quarterback this season. But it brings questions to mind, Chris. Like, what exactly, what a hardship did Justin Fields go through that the NCAA would grant him this waiver that he doesn't have to sit out a year? The guy was eligible to play in the bowl game for Georgia not only a couple of months ago.
Yeah, he was. The hardship that they ruled on was an incident that took place outside a Georgia baseball game, which was apparently racially motivated by a Georgia player who was subsequently kicked out of the program. And look, I mean, we all know there's a lot of ugliness in the world. There are a lot of stupid people in the world that tend to, you think we'd be beyond the point of people, acting that way, but we're not. It's like any other part of society. That's what happened. Now, whether that justified getting immediately eligible, hey, look, racially charged atmosphere, I want to leave and I'm not comfortable here. I want to be eligible immediately. Well, they kind of obviously ruled that they could. Now, is that a very liberal ruling? Look, I wasn't there. I heard about the incident. I don't know, how exactly all the details, how it played out, but I've heard different things. I didn't know if it was going to play out, Scott, in terms of him getting immediate eligibility, but it was. And I never am surprised by the NCAA and how they do things.
Rush the Field with Scott Seidenberg and Chris Leary can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.